This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, December 5th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, we'll look back on the life and career of Bloomington native and science fiction writer Bob Tucker, and a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana. But first, today's news. After a long debate and five rounds of voting, the Democratic majority of the Champaign County Board elected Pius Weibel as its new chair last night. Weibel came through only after his fellow Democratic candidates Tony Fabry and former County Board Chair Barb Wysocki made way for him. Weibel says he has a lot of challenges before him.
Well, I think the biggest challenge for any politician at any level is trust in government. I mean, we certainly see in this county, people have said that they lack trust in some aspects of the county government. And certainly in this state, there's a lot of mistrust of the state government, and then there's a lot of mistrust in the federal government, too. And I hope that changes, and it's got to start somewhere.
Weibel says in the next 2 years, he wants to promote more bipartisanship at the county board. Republican John Jay, who also ran for county board chair, says he thinks that Weibel's election is a good step forward.
Mr. Weibel's, I've worked with him on committees. He's a very nice gentleman. I think he'll do a good job. We just need to give him a little time to get in the feel of the seat. But I think hopefully the county can move forward. He's already made a major decision, and that's he's made, I think, most of the committees, standing committees, vice chair, are of the minority party.
No Republican voted for Weibel, but the county board unanimously elected Democrat Tom Betts as vice chair of the board. The defense rested Monday without testimony from a woman charged with drowning her three young children. Jurors also didn't hear from her former boyfriend, who was already serving a life sentence for murder in the 2003 deaths. Amanda Hamm and Maurice Legrone Jr. were both expected to testify about how a car sank in Clinton Lake with the children trapped inside. But defense attorney Steve Skelton says Hamm decided over the weekend to exercise her constitutional right against self-incrimination. Skelton said he opted against calling Legrone to avert a potentially damaging cross-examination by prosecutors. Skelton told reporters that 5 days of defense testimony support Hamm's account that the deaths were a tragic accident. Prosecutors contend Hamm and Legrone planned the drownings because the children were in the way of their relationship. A man convicted yesterday of strangling a Terre Haute woman more than 6 years ago still faces trial in the murders of two others. Jurors deliberated for about 2 hours before returning a guilty verdict against 44-year-old Kevin Hampton for the May 2000 death of 18-year-old Diana Lehman. The jury also found Hampton guilty of rape and criminal deviant conduct. Hampton is scheduled to face trial next month in the 2004 strangling deaths of 18-year-old Tanette Dickinson and 48-year-old Cassie Harris. DNA evidence linked Hampton to the rape and murder of Lehman, who was found dead in her home. Champaign's fire department is among those across the state conducting awareness campaigns tied to a new state law. Next month, all homes will require a carbon monoxide detector. But Champaign Deputy Fire Chief Tim Wild says the law will be largely self-enforced.
There is no real teeth in the enforcement end of it, but much like smoke detectors, people are going to become aware of the law. We will be out in people's homes just from regular calls. And then there's the other side of it is the apartments. And apartment owners associations have been notified. They're probably going to be ahead of the curve.
Wild says the fire department hopes to spread its education campaign to realtors and home builders. The new law requires that every home have at least one working carbon monoxide alarm within 15 feet of each room used for sleeping. Wild says any reading on the detector over 35 parts per million will set them off. From 2001 through this year, Champaign firefighters responded to nearly 500 calls involving the alarms. 25% of those resulted in a medical emergency. A new research center at Urbana's Carl Foundation Hospital is aiming for international stature, but it will have a local resident as its first leader. AM 580's Tom Rogers reports.
38-year-old Dr. Stephen Bopart has been named to head the Mills Breast Cancer Institute. Bopart himself is a cancer survivor. He says contact among patients, doctors, and the research community is crucial, which is why it's important to have the Institute on Carl's campus.
It's the physicians that are really asking the questions, and it's the researchers that are wanting to answer those. And so you have this constant feedback, and it's a cycle. And having those individuals in close proximity is really going to make the research and the patient care most productive.
Bopart's research at the University of Illinois is focused on detecting cancerous tumors even as soon as when cells begin to mutate. Douglas Mills and his late wife Linda founded the institute. He says Linda Mills saw Bopart as a potential leader from the first time they met.
She had good feelings about Persia, good judgment. And when they met, which was at the forum, you know, which, when we announced our $10 million gift, she was very impressed with his credentials and who he was and what he was doing. And so this would not be a surprise to her. She'd be thrilled.
The Mills Breast Cancer Institute is under construction and set to open in 2008. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. To many who knew him in the Bloomington Normal area, Arthur Wilson Tucker, Bob to his friends, was a movie theater projectionist and family man. He was active in his union local and worked occasionally as a stage electrician for Illinois State University. But Tucker, who died recently at the age of 91, was also a published author who wrote over 20 science fiction and mystery novels. And for a small but widespread community, he was a beloved celebrity. Jim Meadows reports.
In 1935, as America was struggling to escape the Depression, 20-year-old Bob Tucker of Bloomington was waging a war against the use of wire staples to bind pulp magazines. He waged it in the letter column of the pulp science fiction monthly Astounding Stories, where he argued that chewing gum was a superior binding method.
Wire staples are detours on the path to utopia. Remove them, replace them with gum binding, and the mag stands itself up. Open at any desired place while you eat your morning mush.
Bob Tucker was kidding. The Great Staple War, as it was called, was a joke that Tucker and his co-conspirators played out in the Astounding Stories letter column for several months. It marked Tucker's role among the far-flung community of isolated, intense young men who believed that science fiction carried a hopeful vision of the future. Science fiction editor and publisher Tony Weisskopf says Tucker was influential among those early fans, many of whom, like Tucker himself, would become professional science fiction writers.
One of the things he did to help shape the science fiction subculture was burst the bubble of pretension that many of the young and earnest science fiction fans had in the 30s and 40s. He was able to take a step back and poke fun at the overly zealous criticisms and personal attacks that could occur back then.
But if Tucker could joke about being a science fiction fan, he was serious about science fiction. In a 1975 interview, he said it was the only fiction he preferred reading over nonfiction. He sold his first short story in 1941, and for the next 40 years, dozens of short stories and novels, both science fiction and mystery, appeared under his pen name, Wilson Tucker. James Gunn directs the Center for the Study of Science Fiction at the University of Kansas. He says Tucker saw writing as more an avocation than a profession and never pursued it full time.
He was a union movie projectionist, and he said there was lots of time in the movie booth between changing reels, and so he mostly do his thinking about writing then, and maybe even some of the writing itself.
The Wilson Tucker novels that impress Gunn the most are told in the context of several centuries and dramatic social changes. In The Lincoln Hunters, published in 1958, a 26th-century historian named Ben Stewart travels back in time to record a lost speech by a nearly forgotten figure named Abraham Lincoln. In the novel, Tucker refers to an actual speech that Lincoln delivered in Bloomington in 1856. In this excerpt, Stewart struggles not to blow his cover as he watches Lincoln speak.
Startled, Stewart swung his attention around. He found Lincoln's eyes locked with his. Stewart nodded gravely and sought to appear in agreement with whatever had been said, but inwardly he was alarmed. A phrase or two, or perhaps a complete sentence, slipped by unheard as he struggled to remain calm and not fall from character. Very casually, as though to scratch the skin around his collar, he lifted his hand to his neck to determine if the microphone had somehow slipped from concealment.
While many science fiction writers of his generation were upbeat about the future, Tucker was often the opposite. Much of The Lincoln Hunters centers on Stewart's discovery that he prefers 19th-century America to his own highly regimented version of 700 years later. Weisskopf says Tucker's view of society and his characters was clear-eyed and unsentimental.
I think Tucker had the anthropologist's ability to step back and look at his subjects without emotional involvement, and that attitude does come through in the fiction. He took human beings for what they were, foibles and aspirations and all.
In his most prolific period, Tucker published about a novel a year, all written in his spare time. At the same time, he stayed heavily involved in science fiction fandom, publishing and writing for amateur magazines known as fanzines, and meeting other fans at conventions. It was at these gatherings that Tucker became famous for a social ritual involving a line from an old Red Skelton routine and his favorite drink, Jim Beam's Choice Bourbon Green Label, aged 5 years. Tucker's friend and fellow science fiction fan Keith Stokes saw the bourbon ritual played out many times.
He would take a sip of it, and he'd pass it to the next person, and they would take one and pass along. If someone happened not to be a drinker, they could just take a sniff at the top of the bottle and continue to pass it. And as it went around the circle, they'd each hold up their right hand until it came back to Bob. And then Bob would take one more sip, and then everyone would bring their right arm down in a sweeping gesture to the front together and go smooth.
The smooth routine became Tucker's trademark among his fellow science fiction fans, who knew him not so much as Wilson Tucker published author, but Bob Tucker, fellow fan. Witty and gregarious, Tucker wrote at least as much for fanzines as he did for professional markets. He was a frequent guest at fan conventions as far away as England and Australia, and could always be relied on for an entertaining speech. Here's a snippet of a Bob Tucker speech from around 1980, captured on an audio cassette fanzine published by Larry Tucker, no relation. Tucker imagines his side of a telephone call, where he tries to get past the front desk at a science fiction magazine.
Put me through to Stan Smith, please. My name is Wilson Tucker. No, you spell it with a T. I'm a writer. Writer. I'm one of those people who churns out all those millions of words that keeps the advertisements apart.
He was a charming person, genuinely interested in people.
Tony Weisskopf.
And he went out of his way to meet people, to orient them at science fiction conventions, to introduce them to other people, to make them feel comfortable in this subculture. And he made a difference in hundreds of people's lives that way.
Weisskopf says she's researching Tucker's life for a possible biography, not because of his fiction writing, but because of his impact as a fan.
As I learned more about him, I realized how important this one person's impact was on a unique American subculture, that of science fiction fandom, science fiction readers, and those who produce science fiction writers and artists and so on. And I was struck at telling the tale of this person, the moral of which is that one person can make a difference.
Bob Tucker was in Florida this past October visiting a daughter when he died of congestive heart failure. Keith Stokes got the news of Tucker's death in suburban St. Louis, where he was attending a science fiction convention. That same weekend, he and some of Tucker's other close friends from science fiction fandom shared their memories of him before a convention crowd he estimated at around 1,000.
We each shared a few words that we had about Bob, and then took a bottle of Beam's Choice Bourbon, and in a long-time tradition of Bob's, passed it down between each of us, and then although the audience could not share the beams, everyone held up the right arm and then very slowly brought it down sweepingly, saying smooth. We were saying goodbye to Bob by smoothing him.
Tony Weisskopf says Tucker stopped writing professionally as he neared 70 and saw that his abilities were declining. 25 years later, his Wilson Tucker science fiction and mystery novels are largely out of print. But Weisskopf says her company, Bain Books, is interested in republishing his fiction online in the form of e-books. I'm Jim Meadows.
In the forecast for East Central Illinois, expect partly sunny skies today with a high of 35 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, not as cold, a low of 25. Southwest winds up to 15 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, scattered flurries in the morning with highs in the upper 30s. And west winds up to 15 miles per hour. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, December 5th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
Thank you.